Hello and welcome to the Dune Minute Podcast, your place to dive deep, minute by minute, into the cinematic adaptation of Frank Herbert's World of Dune. I'm one of your hosts, John.
And I'm Zach.
And we are back, still just riding a worm.
Man, isn't that what every day feels like? Just riding the worm? How many times do you ride the worm today? Just once when you woke up?
Once when I wake up, once before I go to bed.
That's what I figured, yeah. That seems normal. Healthy. Yeah. It's good for
sometimes there's prostate health. Sometimes there's a mid-afternoon worm riding as well. You never know. That joke would have been a lot funnier if I didn't stumble over my own words.
It's okay. Still made me laugh. We got Hole being shown this week. We're riding the worm. Talking about jacking off, if anyone didn't get the joke.
We're tugging on worm.
Tugging on worm.
We're tugging on worm skin.
Tugging on worm skin, showing hole. Hell yeah, okay.
All right, we're going to cut all that.
I don't know. We'll see.
Who knows? Oh, God.
We have respectable people that come onto this show.
We have financial professionals. We have professional podcasters that create so many hours of content a week.
I have friends that I respect.
I have my longest running in-person friend is a guest.
Yeah, and here we are over here jacking off.
I mean, in fairness, you know, she was also making jack off jokes with us last time.
So. She said vagina dentata, if I remember correctly.
Yeah. So,
all right. Well, okay. Maybe that.
Shout out, Charlie.
All right, let's get serious, John. Let's talk about another minute of Dune Part Two.
Well, we left yesterday with all of the Fedaiken chanting Muad'Dib, Muad'Dib as Paul was passing by riding the worm. And we continue with Paul's worm riding as we cut to a close-up of his face. And he's got his, you know, goggles on and everything. And then we cut to Stilgar again, who is just kind of beside himself in awe. And all he can say in Chukobsa is, as written.
Yeah, this is the meme shot.
One of the meme shots.
Yeah. But this is like the big meme shot.
Yeah. It's the thumbnail for this episode.
Good.
You think I'm going to let that one fucking slide? Come on, dude.
He's just looking on in complete awe. A-W-E awe.
Yeah.
And he is just dumbstruck. I mean, this is the moment that another moment, I guess, that he's been just living his whole life waiting for.
Stilgar is blinded by the majesty of Paul riding Shai-Hulud.
Yep. Yeah. All around Stilgar at this point, the Fremen who are there to witness this, they like fall to their knees. They start bowing.
They start praying.
Yeah.
They're like,
reverential actions all the way down.
This is revelation of the Messiah. Call it what it is.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
So Chani sees this and she's like, ah, fuck.
Shit.
She's like, I did not want this to happen. So we went from her looking excited and happy and relieved yesterday.
She was cheering and she was, you know, shouting just like Shishkali and Stilgar. And
yeah.
Now she's like, God fucking damn it.
Yeah. And the scowl is back. We get the Zendaya scowl.
I wouldn't say it's so much a scowl as it is more of a concern.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Okay. Well, she's just not feeling good about all this worshiping that is going on around here. And I use that word because it's going to come back to us at the end of the week.
It's going to stick with us for the rest of the movie and then into the next one. So
yeah, back on the worm, Paul is heading towards a massive dune. It looks like it goes almost like straight vertical.
You know what it reminds me of? I don't know how long it's been since you've been to Six Flags here in Georgia.
Ooh, a number of years.
Same. Like, I think the last time I went was like 2011.
Sure, that feels right.
It's been a minute.
Over a decade.
But I remember that Six Flags in Georgia had one of those roller coasters that just like went straight the fuck up.
Ooh, that was...
It was one of the ones where like it went straight up and then it had like the curve at the top and then you went back down.
I think that was the Mindbender. They called that the Mindbender.
Sure.
Okay, anyways.
I was drunk, so it's fucking...
Who knows? I'm not a big roller coaster fan, so I never really rode them.
I loved roller coasters. Oh, can't do them anymore, but
yeah, I don't know. It took me until I went to Universal Studios before I actually enjoyed them, because they have good ones there.
Yeah.
The ones at Six Flags are like real fucking rickety.
So we grew up pretty poor. But like my parents had a deal with me where if I got all A's throughout the year, they would take me to Universal or, like Islands of Adventure or something like that. It's the same park, just two different sides to the park.
I know. That's fuck Disney. Going to Disney World. Universal Islands of Adventure is where it's at.
Hell yeah. Dueling Dragons back in the day?
Absolutely.
Fuck yeah, dude.
Still Dueling
the
Dragons.
Iceland was the best one.
It's still Dueling Dragons. There's just now, they don't go at the same time. They offset the carts or the trains. Someone, I think, got killed because a shoe flew off or
cowards.
Something. But now it's still Dueling Dragons. Yeah, it's just a Harry Potter themed one now.
The ice one was the... Now you had the Hulk ride.
Oh, the Hulk's the best.
Where it just fucking launched you out of the goddamn tube. Yeah.
The Hulk's great.
Anyways. I definitely threw up on the Spider-Man one because it gave me like the worst fucking motion sickness.
Isn't that the 4D ride they have? Yeah, that one was cool.
With like the shitty 5 frame per second like animations that were going on. But like the animation didn't line up with the actual like cart that would move. So that's what made me fucking blow chunks.
I don't think that one's there anymore. It's been reskinned to another Harry Potter ride.
I'm sure it has. Anyways,
the Dune reminds you of that roller coaster that goes up and like straight vertical turn then back down. Yeah,
but
it's almost like a bowl, like a concave structure, like just like a bowl sitting 90 degrees on its side.
Yeah. But Paul doesn't go directly into this one.
No,
we see
he
him
doesn't.
Once again, you know, pull hard on the left and the worm, you know, turns to the left as well. And we see him instead go towards another dune that's a bit easier to, you know, crest and go over the top of.
Right, right.
And as Paul is doing this, he, you know, goes up over the dune and we kind of have like a weird, it's not entirely silence, but a moment of like complete peace and serenity as like the worm is like cresting it and he's just like looking out over the huge open desert and everything.
Yeah, it's gotta feel cool, man. It's gotta feel like a exhilarating thing once you
you're
stable.
When you go over a bump in the road and you feel yourself like kind of like go up out of your seat a little bit.
Sure Yeah. That's I love that shit. And I cannot wait to do that in a plane. That's one thing that I remember when, my brother took me flying is doing stuff like that.
Yeah.
Which real fun stuff. Love it. So I don't like roller coasters, but I love doing shit like that.
All right.
It's the upside down part that I don't enjoy.
Oh, I love that shit.
Nah, I don't like loop de loops and stuff like that. Okay. So the only roller coaster going back to Six Flags that I truly enjoyed was the All American Scream Machine.
So that rickety ass wood one?
The rickety ass wooden one, which it was not a comfortable roller coaster by any stretch of the imagination, but it had like 5 big hills on it.
Uh-huh.
So you got that feeling of weightlessness like over and over and over again. And I love that.
All right.
So right as Paul, like he does his zero G parabola dive off the worm, or the worm's doing that motion. It cuts to a carving. So we kind of smash cut back to the siege.
Yeah. Paul, the shot that we get of Paul as he's doing his zero G dive is not from his perspective. It is, you know, looking at Paul cresting, riding the worm.
It's like a side profile shot.
And that smash cut is the same exact, like same motion, same everything in the carving.
Yeah. Really cool stuff.
I love those kind of cuts
when
you have like your action with the person to then like a drawing of it.
Yeah.
Love that kind of shit.
And this is not a new drawing. This one's been there for a very long time. Yes. So it just further illustrates that, Paul is part of a prophecy.
Mm-hmm.
Now I have to imagine that anyone who rides the worm is going to look like this. So this is not something that is specific to Paul, but again, like all of the prophecies that we've heard, that he's being, template matched into, It just, it's that vague enough to where people can go, oh yes, yeah, see, look, there he is. That was him. He did that. So, but it still looks cool.
Yeah. Looks very cool. And we see that for a moment and our camera begins to, you know, pan down as we hear the words in Chukobza translated, Reverend Mother, Reverend Mother.
Yeah.
That's where I'm in it ends.
Yeah. It's a woman shouting from off screen. That's it.
I have the last Art and Soul notes.
Okay, go for it.
For the week. All of the shots that we saw here with Paul, like, actually driving the worm and going up the dune and doing his, like, weightlessness and everything, that was on the more flat gimbal that the Shai Hulud skin would be on, and they could, you know, kind of rotate it across six axes, you know, forward, backward, left, right, up, down, kind of thing. And that's where they were really able to, like, get a lot of the practical effects of the pulling and the driving and riding the worm
It's
in place.
Basically really cool. The same mechanics as, like, a mechanical bull, except with an up and down.
A lot slower.
Yeah.
Yeah. Could you imagine this giant 25 meter by 10 meter, but with the speed of a fucking mechanical bull?
Yeah, hell yeah.
So it's just bam, 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 bam.
And, you know, there's far fewer drunk college kids on it.
Or like 40-year-old women.
Oh, yeah, well.
But yeah, this, you know, once again was all shot and, you know, done under the worm unit led by Tanya Lapointe in Budapest and everything. One thing that Art and Soul does talk about that I just kind of wanted to bring up as well is how they had kind of internal nomenclature for some of the maneuvers that they would do, like the school bus bump, which is when it would, you know, simulate a school bus hitting a pothole, or like some of the side to side shakes and stuff like that.
Sure.
It's just fun little, you know.
Hell yeah! Sit in the back of the bus and get like launched to the ceiling when you hit a speed bump.
Hell yeah, dude!
I remember that.
Did you guys ever do the thing where you would like also tap the top whenever you go over the train tracks or whatever?
No, we never did that.
Oh.
No.
All right. Well, anyways.
We all had our things. We all had little...
Every school had its own school bus lore.
Yeah, exactly.
Every bus route had its own.
I was the last stop going to school.
I was the last stop.
And the first one coming home. So I didn't get a lot of time on the bus. Oh.
See, I was the opposite. I was like one of the first ones on the bus, one of the first ones off. So... Or one of the last ones off.
Ah, gotcha. I also had like older family members at school, so I would just ride with them sometimes.
Yeah.
So I want to talk a little bit about the books. I've been kind of silent about the book notes this week so far.
You have been. It's been a little strange.
So this chapter, Paul riding the worm, or at least getting up on the worm, it's like a paragraph or two. Frank Herbert does not spend a lot of time talking about this. He spends more time talking about Paul psyching himself up to ride the worm.
Get ready, go.
Yeah. And he's thinking about the importance of this and like what it means from a religious and this cultural standpoint. They do some quick maths about the way, like how far away they should be standing and like the approach and, you know, setting up the shot and all that kind of stuff. But the one thing I will say about a big difference between the book and the movie is Paul in the book is fucking cool, calm, collected, and he is so, so much more elegant getting up on the worm than Paul in the movie is. Like Worm goes beside him. He gets his hooks in and he's up there and it's a quick thing. And he's like, I fucking got this.
Yeah.
And another big departure is that once he gets on the worm, all the other Fremen go, cool, great. They also join him on the worm. So everyone's up there and they're all
riding worm together.
Yeah, absolutely. It's just, I mean, it's a circle worm ride, really. I don't know. That wouldn't work.
Realistically, they would be more lined up in a train on the length of this worm.
They're riding the train on the worm, yeah. I think someone in the back was playing Okie Cookie, but... Anyways.
All right.
So they get up there, and Stilgar you know, gets up to Paul, and it's a lot less dramatic in the books.
Yeah.
But Stilgar gets up there, and they have this conversation about Stilgar's like, yeah, well, you did fine, but, you know, we have 12-year-olds who could do it better than you. And Paul's like, come on, dude, I did pretty good for my first time.
Shut the fuck up. I wasn't born here.
Yeah. And Stilgar's like, yeah, you did good. He's like, with some practice, maybe one day you'll be a sand rider or a worm rider or whatever he calls it. And Paul's like, motherfucker, I just did it. I think I am one now. And Stilgar's like, yeah, sure, fine, whatever.
Stilgar's like, you got lucky.
Yeah, pretty much. So, but then Stilgar asks Paul, what do you want to do? You know, you're up here. You've called the worm. You are in control of this ride. Where do you want to go? He's like, the men are itching to go hunt Harkonnens with you. So, you know, we can just turn left and go to get one of their harvesters and have a good old time. But Paul's like, you know, no, I want to go south. He's like, I'm ready to make the 20 thumper ride to the southern population. And Stilgar is like, that's a long way, man. That's like, we have to plan for that kind of stuff. And Paul's like, no, my kid's there. Because at this point, Leda the first is born.
Yep.
And Jessica's in the southern hemisphere. And so he wants to go see his family. And Alia, I guess, is there too. The weird one, Alia the Strange.
Fucking 6 month old is just out there in the corner tweaking.
She's two at this point in the books. So he's like, no, we're going south. Stilgar understands the cultural significance of this because, mm-hmm. again, a lot more fundamentalists live in the south than they do the north.
From the south, can't you tell by his accent?
So,
which I think is actually interesting because I was reading about it in the Dune Encyclopedia. Well, not about this specifically, but it came up when I was looking through the Dune Encyclopedia, how the accents are actually divvied up by Western and Eastern Hemisphere rather than Northern and Southern.
Northern, like a North-South divide makes more sense to me.
It does, but Dune Encyclopedia says Western, Eastern.
All right. Fair enough.
Argue with them.
I won't.
All right.
Yeah, and then we cut back to, there's a whole chapter, Jessica is, you know, talking with Alia. Alia's being weird. Hera's there.
I'm just imagining this grown-ass woman talking to a two-year-old who's, like, fully conscious and capable of having conversation.
Yeah.
But also just has two-year-old behavioral tendencies.
Well, they're talking about how... They're like, why didn't you want to play with the other kids? And Ollie is like, because they're kids and I've been conscious for, like, I have an eternity's worth of consciousness.
I know. It's so funny to just imagine, though. Yeah. Like, this fucking, like, you have a bunch of nephews.
Mm-hmm.
You've seen them all when they were two.
Sure. Some of them are currently.
Yeah. But imagine them with full consciousness.
Yikes. Yeah, it's people looking at her as strangely as they do is not unwarranted.
No, it's fucking weird.
Yeah, I think the thing that gets like starts this conversation because it's Hera is there. If you remember Paul's inherited servant / wife, maybe, yep. I don't know, Jameis's ex-wife.
Yeah,
Jameis's widow, I should say. She's there, and apparently someone else in the siege had a child, and they, the child was crying, and they allow the child to cry and cry and cry because they say that a Fremen, when he's first born, must cry because after they stop that, they are never allowed to cry again. Mostly symbolic. Obviously you can cry. But they're saying, like, and because we have to keep silent and, you know, practice water discipline and all this kind of stuff.
Yeah.
When you're first born is the only time that you are allowed
to cry.
Yeah, pretty much. So this baby was crying and Alia came over and just like touched the child and it stopped crying.
Shut the fuck up.
Yeah. And everyone was like, why are you letting her around a kid? Like, this is weird. Because they didn't think that she was going to harm the child or anything like that. But it was just like, don't let this demon near my baby.
I wish we just got weird fucking child Alia in this movie, and that we had the actual time skip and everything.
Yeah, that would have been nice.
Talk about it more next week with our guest, but
yeah. But yeah, and so that's kind of where, that's kind of what the book talks about, the sand or the worm riding scene. Paul does it. Everyone is super on board with Paul now. And Stilgar is pushing back on Paul's leadership a little bit. There's this dynamic that's brewing where Paul knows that in order to truly lead the Fremen, he will eventually have to take Stilgar's place.
Yeah.
Historically, that is done through a fight and death.
Yeah.
That's how you pass on that torch. But Paul is trying to figure out a way to get around that, which is something we'll talk about here in the movie a little bit later.
Much later.
Much later in the movie. So I'm not going to talk about all that, but that dynamic is starting to show itself in the book right now.
Yeah. One other thing from Art and Soul. I lied, actually. Art and Soul does have one more thing. And it was very weird that it was brought up in this section, but I guess it makes sense because it's the first time that we really see it. Technically, last week was when we first saw it. I just didn't bring it up because all of our Art and Soul stuff related to this entire sequence was this week. But Denis Villeneuve in the book talks about Chani's headband, the bright blue headband, in that it is a symbol of her falling in love. Apparently,
okay.
According to the filmmakers, when Fremen fall in love, they wear a bright blue headband.
Okay.
So
I dig it. Well, it looks good.
The more you know.
She looks good in that blue.
It's a very nice blue.
Yeah.
You brought some chairs over that were in your storage unit that you're no longer using.
Yeah.
It's almost the same color blue, actually.
That is very true. They are almost the same color.
Anyways.
Well, that does not mean I love you.
Fuck you. Bitch.
All right, cool. Well, that is all I have for book notes this week. What do you say we come back tomorrow and talk a little bit more about what this lady running in saying, Reverend Mother. Let's talk a little bit more about that.
Yeah, Jessica's back in the movie. Let's talk about that tomorrow. As always, you can find us online. We are in several places. You can find us on Blue Sky at DuneMinute.com, and you can email DuneMinute@gmail.com if you'd like to get in touch with us. We'll be back tomorrow with another episode of the Dune Minute Podcast. Have a good one.
See ya.